This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're listening to Family Feud, part of the Paris Style podcast family. They might not be brother and sister, but they sure do fight like they are. Here's your hosts, Keely Yore and Shotgun Spratling.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Feud podcast. I'm your host, Keely Yore, joined by Shotgun Spratling and cousin of the pod, Chris Trevino. We have a good show for you guys today. It's kind of a smorgasbord of topics. We got to talk about Pac-12 Media Day. We got to talk about our final PRP that we saw in quotation marks. Talk about fall camp. It's right around the corner, people. Football is coming soon.
Say it ain't so.
That sounds like it's bad, Shotgun.
I just don't believe it. Say it ain't so. No, it's coming, and it feels more and more real each day,
yep.
You know, especially this week. We've had Pac-12 Media Day. We've gotten to meet with the Pac-12 Commissioner, PRP, the final one of those of the summer. So we're a week away, basically, from, you know, being back out at Howard Jones Field and being on the field, seeing practice. So a lot of differences from last year.
Yeah, I'll say.
And it feels more and more like we're getting back towards normality. I mentioned that way too much probably, but we slowly are moving that direction. Hopefully things continue to look up.
Yeah, so we'll talk about the fall camp expectations in the sense of what we think we will be able to do. We got an update on what we will be able to see, access we will have, so we'll get into that. And then we'll talk about special teams. We did our offensive preview. We did our defensive preview. And now it's a special teams preview. If you missed any of those episodes, just go back in the feed. That's the last two Family Feud episodes there to get you ready for fall camp. And, of course, we'll answer your questions. Thanks to everyone who sent them in. As a reminder, if you have a question, submission, or comment for the show, email us at familyfeudpod@gmail.com or look out for a tweet from Shotgun Spratling. Usually that goes out on Thursdays. And then we'll have some take it or leave it. The return, Chris. The sponsors come rushing back in when they heard you were back.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, I realized that I was punishing you guys last week by not giving it you guys the take it or leave it. But then I also realized, you know, I stayed up all last week. I couldn't sleep because I realized I was also hurting the viewers. Because that's probably the only reason
viewers
why
on a podcast.
this is why he does visual bits. Maybe he doesn't know what the medium is.
The ear viewers. I realized I was hurting them, and in my effort to hurt you guys, I hurt them too. And I apologize to all the ear listeners out there. I won't take it out on you again. I'll keep the beef off. When the record button's off, I'll keep the beef off there. That's where it belongs, in the streets, not on the airwaves. So I apologize. This is my heartfelt apology. You know, I had a PR script given to me by a firm I hired, and I'm not reading any of it. I'm just going all off.
Straight from the heart,
because that's
he's tearing up.
Wiping away some tears.
This is a visual bit.
That's, oh my God, I'm sorry. Can we just cut?
You still got about 10 minutes and 45 seconds at least before you're getting to Nick Rolovich filibuster territory here. So I think you got to keep going.
He wasn't there at Pac-12 Media Day, so he doesn't know what you're saying.
Oh,
also,
He followed along.
I'm too choked up right now. So let's just move on. Just overall, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to the fans.
Also, I just want to point out that at one point he said ear listeners.
I noticed that too.
I mentioned it several times. I don't think you need to point
it out.
No, you
said ear viewers initially and then changed to ear listeners.
Ear viewers, ear listeners, whatever.
They're different.
They're all different, but not really.
Right, well, Shotgun, you mentioned it. Pac-12 Media Day. An interesting affair. Back to in-person event. So that was fun. We got to catch up with players. I like, and we've talked about this a lot, being able to just talk to people off the record, have chit-chat, stuff like that. Got to get one-on-ones with players and coaches. One coach, I don't know why I said multiple coaches, but, you know, not trying
you
to hide
chat
myself.
With any of the other coaches?
I bumped into Cristobal by accident, so I said sorry. So if that counts, then yes. No, but it's weird. It's a mixed bag. Like, there was a lot to talk about, and then also I came away being like, okay, that was Pac-12 Media Day.
I mean, that's kind of every time. You know, there's going to be some topics, and this year there were a ton of topics that were not necessarily related to what was going on the field. Not, hey, who's coming back? Who's going to fill in this position? You know, there were a lot more topics, overarching topics. Obviously, conference realignment. Everyone wanted to talk about that because Texas, Oklahoma, they had, you know, had sent their letter to the SEC that morning, I believe it was. You have NIL, obviously, is about a month old now. So where is that going to go in the future? All the players were asked about their NIL deals and what they have. Vaccinations, obviously, with Nick Rolovich not attending because he's deciding not to be vaccinated. You know, there was a lot of other topics going on rather than just on the field play and which teams are going to be good this year. So it was interesting that there were so many different things to talk about, and, you know, that Pac-12 Commissioner George Kliakoff didn't take, what, 6, 7, 8 minutes to mention football. You know, he got right into football, unlike his predecessor, who wanted to talk about rowing and everything else before he got to football. So it was a much different vibe, I think, because of that. You know, I think that set the tone. Kliakoff in the morning talking about the conference realignment and talking about how there's been a number of schools, number of programs that have reached out, number of phone calls he has received from probably organizations, conferences, universities, presidents. I think he's probably hearing from a lot of different people right now. And sounds like the Pac-12 is in a good position as being a favorable destination for some programs, and maybe the Pac-12 can pick and choose there. But I think that's set the tone. Him talking about that and that the focus is going to be on the revenue sports. It was one of the biggest takeaways for me. He said football and basketball are going to be the focus of this conference going forward. They're not going to just forget about the Olympic sports. Obviously, there's a ton of Pac-12 athletes that are in Tokyo right now. Pac-12 ties, a ton from USC, 66 the last time I saw the count. So they're not going to forget about all those sports, but they know to get back on the same level, and particularly with the TV deals and the fact that they're falling so far behind, they got to get football and basketball right, and they're going to figure out ways to do that.
How would you grade? Obviously, I wasn't there, but how would you grade Commissioner, the commish? This is his first Pac-12 Media Day.
I mean, I don't know a grade as far as a letter or number grade there, but he continues to win the easy battles. Win the offseason. I said this about Jed Fish on Tunnel Vision, that I really like the things he's doing. He's bringing back energy. He's bringing back, you know, hype and, you know, excitement to the program. And I think that Kliakoff is bringing a lot of those things back to the Pac-12 as well. You feel like, hey, the Pac-12 is actually moving in the right direction. You feel positive about the energy around the conference, even though there's some things that are going to be holding it back, that TV deal, until 2024, unless they try to get out early. So I think that he continues to win the easy wins early. He mentioned that. He used that term at one point, easy wins. And, you know, we're seeing that he comes in and just do the opposite of what Larry Scott was doing. When someone is struggling at their job and you take over for them, the easy thing that you can do is just do the opposite. And I really like what he's doing right now as far as going around to the campuses. He's doing what he calls a listening tour. He's going to stop. It's an 11-city tour, 12 campuses, if you include Los Angeles being UCLA and USC. And he started that at USC. So, you know, he stopped by. I really like how he's going about it. He met with the SIDs before the Pac-12 Media Day. He met with the coaches individually. And then he met with, you know, when he came to USC for his campus visit, he met with all the athletic coaches. You know, they had a breakfast together. He met with the media. We had a little happy hour meet and greet that was, you know, we can't exactly talk about everything that he discussed. It was off the record. But just him being out there, these are things Larry Scott would never do.
Yeah.
And then he was going to a dinner. So, and he met with the student athletes, you know, the leadership council basically for USC student athletes this morning. So meeting with all the different groups, getting their perspective. And I think it's a great thing for him to do because he has an outside perspective. He's coming in. He doesn't, you know, he's not just a SEC commissioner coming over or yeah, a conference commissioner from a different league. He is coming from kind of outside the realm. So he's coming in. He's going to bring a different perspective, but he's going and learning the things that he needs to know by going and visiting all the campuses from, you know, the power school in the conference, which USC should be, to, you know, the at the lower end, the Washington State or Oregon State that don't have the same, you know, bargaining power that USC does or UCLA. So I think he's going to find, you know, the different opinions from both of those sides. So I think he's doing a lot of good things so far early in his tenure and, you know, getting the easy wins. Big things still to come, though.
I just wanted a letter, man.
I don't do letter grades like you.
I thought it was interesting because my opinion changed a little bit after our off-the-record session because it's really easy to win prepared statements, you know, or win the very cookie-cutter press conference type of environment. And so I kind of – I was impressed in his first, you know, Zoom presser in person at Pac-12 Media Day. I was like, okay, this is kind of more the same and this is an easy win. But just hearing him speak off the record, I feel like there's a common sense that was kind of lacking in the higher up region of the Pac-12. And so the fact that it just seems like common sense is there, I think is a better sign for the conference overall.
The two things that stand out there are he's well prepared going into it. You talk about, hey, he's not just reading. He is reading a statement at the beginning, but they know what questions are going to be coming. They can expect those. Larry Scott never seemed prepared for those questions.
Yep.
He was, wait, why would people be asking about this? Haven't I done enough? No, you haven't done anything. And then foresight. It feels like the conference has foresight to look ahead at things where it seemed like under Larry Scott it was very reactionary.
Again, it's limited and it's easy to win the offseason, but it seems like this new regime, if you will, is more willing to address the obvious problems that people see about the conference rather than either looking around and being like, what do you mean? Or sweeping it under the rug. And that is a breath of fresh air considering what we've heard from Larry Scott for the last decade or so.
Yeah, I mean, all those things. You know, the Pac-12's issues are pretty well known. It's not hard to go back to the last Larry Scott's press conference and go, okay, what did they ask about? What issues are people still having with the Pac-12? Let's see what the solutions are for that and be prepared for those type of questions. And it seems like he's done that both in the Zoom presser that we had and in the, you know, Pac-12 media and in the meet and greet that we had with him. Very prepared. Just his overall knowledge of things around USC, was surprised by that. You know, Larry Scott definitely would not have known some of the things that he was. And that's just being prepared, going into a meeting where you know who's going to be asking questions, know what kind of questions should be coming.
So do you want to give me a letter?
I want to say like an 89.5.
So like a high B? Very high
so.
B, borderline A?
Yeah.
If you're going letter grade, I don't know why you could even drop down to a B. I mean, I don't know if it's A plus necessarily, but...
Stay out of this.
At
you
least,
don't want to give
at
it
least
stay
in
out
the
of
A
this.
Range.
Stay out of this.
Yeah, I would say the problem is that I guess I'm trying to figure out how much of this is talk versus action. And I guess I'm trying to hedge because I'm like, we haven't seen a lot of action. But, I mean, if you just want to take him for at his word and what he seems like, I think it's an A.
We're just grading the media day, apparently. So.
Okay. A. I would give it an A.
I mean, it's not like he's walking in and be like, hey, Texas and Oklahoma are actually coming to the Pac-12.
Surprise!
We just psyched everybody outside. Surprise, hey. Yeah, that would be an A+, I'm sure, for everyone.
It would be interesting, for sure.
That would have made Pac-12 Media Day completely different.
Oh, yeah. Overall, though, the day as a whole was kind of surreal in the sense of, like, we were back in person. We were asking COVID questions or forfeiture questions. We were talking about name, image, and likeness and hearing players openly talk about brands and being sponsored. And then the backdrop of what is the college football world going to look like in 5 years? You know, it was just kind of surreal that it just felt like everything's in flux. And yet we were trying to capture the moment of the 2021 season on that day. There was a lot that just felt like this is a little surreal.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it was a different venue, so we were kind of trying to figure out where exactly everything was, what was going on compared to the Hollywood Highland location. We're at the W Hotel in Hollywood, a little bit more jam-packed in the main room. And just there were a lot of differences, some small differences, the players being together when they were being interviewed on the main stage. So, you know, it was just kind of feeling our way through it to begin with, I felt like, you know, because it was a new experience, even though it's a similar experience to what we've had before.
Now, moving on to the final PRP before fall camp starts,
Chris, find a one we can see at least, or is quote unquote open so we can see people walking to and fro.
Yeah, so we still did walking observations. We even observed George Kliavkov's walk because he walked past us. Someone on the P asked us for instant analysis about it, and we did it on the P, so it was great. But Chris, I know you were great with your ghost notes. Any notable notes for the people?
Nothing like super, super noticeable. There were a couple faces that we missed last time. This was our first time seeing freshman cornerback Sierra Wright looking long and lean. Did not come out, you know, like in a red carpet outfit. No, just strictly what everyone else was wearing. So that was nice. Got our first look at Jake Smith. The Texas receiver, he was there. Did notice that he was in tennis shoes, unlike everyone else. I don't know if maybe he has to go through some sort of acclimation period or something, but I noticed that he was in tennis shoes. I didn't recognize him at first. Shotgun had to point him out. A little more weight in the face. Last time I saw him was in high school, a little bit leaner, put on some college weight, good college weight.
So not a freshman 15?
No, not a freshman 15.
Okay.
Maximus Gibbs was there. This is my first time seeing him on the USC campus. I believe he was there the first day that I was not there. You guys pointed that out.
Yeah.
I mentioned in the notes that Casey Collier, still a large human being. And then when I saw Max, I was like, well, Max Gibbs is a massive human being. And he looked even more bigger because I was taking notes from the ground. And then you have this 6'7", 390. That's his listed height and weight in the new roster just coming at you, and it's like, I don't want to be in the bottom of that in a scrum, you know, in a pile. So definitely a large human. Those were kind of the standout notes for me.
We also got to see, you know, the coaches, pretty much the full coaching staff. They came out to the field because the team was honoring and getting to meet George Kliavkov, and they presented him with a jersey as well. So it was our first opportunity to see Clay McGuire up close. You know, we've seen him from above in the Aquatic Center, but, you know, he walked by, and, you know, you definitely hear the Texas twang there as he was talking a little bit. So, you know, we're seeing the offensive linemen and seeing a little bit of reshaped bodies. As the summer has gone along, I know a lot of people complain the first photos about particularly the offensive line, but I feel like we're seeing some different bodies a little bit. And, Keely, you've talked to Brett Nealon and Cortland Ford, and both those guys have talked about the weight. Not necessarily that they've lost weight, but they've lost body fat.
Yeah, both of them have lost 8% body fat this offseason, which is interesting. And I talked to Cortland Ford on Wednesday, and he was saying, I feel like an inch taller. He just says he feels really different body wise than how he felt in high school. But it was interesting talking to him. I kind of got the feeling like he feels like he's coming in for that starting left tackle job. He just had that confidence. And then when you push him on it, which I tried to do, you know, you get the player, hey, every competition is open kind of spiel. But it just felt like he was exuding this confidence, like, I kind of know that this is my spot and I need to take it in fall camp. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, and the thing I want to note there is that those guys probably have lost a little bit of weight, but they look stronger. And they look like maybe they're morphing the offensive linemen to be more of air raid style offensive linemen, which are tall, leaner guys that aren't necessarily 330, 350 pounds, but they move well. You can get out and do some zone runs and stuff like that. So I think that they're trying to morph the offensive lineman a little bit. I think we're seeing that more as the summer went along. Obviously, this is, you know, changing your body takes more than a week or, you know, even a month going in. So they've been working with Bobby Steiner and the boys with the strength and conditioning staff throughout the offseason. I think we're starting to see that those bodies are a little bit different as they're going into fall camp. And I know a lot of complaints on the P, you know, after the first set of photos, but I feel like I don't see a big cause for concern off of the body types going into fall camp right now. Now, you get in fall camp and guys lose 10 or 15 pounds, because that can happen if you're not taking care of your body the right way, then I think there'd be a lot more concern. But I feel like the offensive linemen in particular are getting thicker up top while, you know, slimming down a little bit at the same time.
Yeah, it seems like endurance is also something that has been emphasized with a lot of running we've heard. And it just seems like overall they're in better shape just because they're actually having an off season that is semi-normal and they're not working outdoors in pods. I think that overall, I think we'll see a better in shape team just because of that fact alone.
Yeah, you can't not emphasize how much losing last season, the offseason, probably hurt this team. You know, it hurt everyone across the nation, but hurt this team, especially on the offensive line, spot where four guys were changing positions or going to be in new positions from the season prior, and they didn't have the offseason to work on that and develop that chemistry and develop what they, you know, need to learn at those positions. Now with the full offseason, do we see a jump from that offensive line? They really need it if they want to be able to, you know, play up to their potential as a team.
I have nothing to add other than your hilarious sentence of "we got to see him from above." Reference to Clay Maguire. Very like bird talk.
Okay. Bird talk.
How many times do you say, "Oh yeah, I gotta scout him from above. Looked great."
Anytime that you are up above someone?
Yeah, name that.
When you are in the stands?
No.
Yeah.
No. Press box?
Maybe.
One notable player that we've seen a couple times, but looks like he's not going to be available or ready at the beginning of fall camp. Ishmael Sopcich, again yesterday, was not dressed out in the same attire, came out last from the team. Both Keely and Chris noted this, that he still just does not look like he is participating yet. So that is definitely a concern with, if you listen to our last episode talking about the defense, how much a concern the defensive nose tackle is for the defense going forward.
Even if you read the bio on his page, it says coming off surgery in the offseason, did not participate in spring, could be limited in 2021. Doesn't say fall camp. It says like whole 2021. So
I hadn't seen that, but that's a great catch there, Chris. You know, and that's a big concern. You know,
yeah.
Chris, you talked to Jamar Sakona. That's a guy. He and Kobe Pepe, we think that they made some good strides, especially Sakona because he got a full spring, whereas Pepe was injured. So those guys, it just seems like more and more they're going to need to step up if USC is going to have the success on defense that they had last year, trying to replace Marlon Tuipulotu, replacing Jay Tefele, who sat out last year, and then losing Brandon Peely, losing Jay Toya in the spring as well. So it big question marks, and those two guys in particular, I think, they're really looking at to need to take a big step forward.
Yeah, I grabbed Sakona on Wednesday, and I was kind of just like blown away just by his maturity and how well spoken he was. I mean, this is a guy, a redshirt freshman who literally only has one game appearance to his name, got a little time in the Washington State win, didn't even record a statistic, but he was talking like a guy who's played in multiple games at USC, at least a starter for one season. But he said there's, you know, this standard they have on the defensive line, and he's here to uphold that. He's going into fall camp treating himself like, hey, I'm going to be the starter. He says it's not really like, it's not like he like had a conversation with himself that this is my responsibility. You know, we lost Brandon Peely to the Achilles injury, not the Keely injury.
Yes.
You know, Jay Toya, he's gone. He's somewhere else now. You know, Ishmael Sopcich, he needs to work his way back. So he just said, you know, there's a standard on this defensive line, and I'm here to uphold that. And, you know, I'm treating myself like I'm going to be the starter going to fall camp. He had a really good spring camp. I think I'm a lot higher. I think I was a lot higher on him out of spring camp than a lot of other people. I think I brought it up on this podcast, and you guys did not agree with my assessment. So I have all the Jamar Sakona stocks. So don't come trying to buy my Sakona stock unless you're going to play top dollar for it, because I bought it when it was low. And I think it's climbing. So
interesting.
He's a big breakout player candidate for me. Probably easily top three if I'm doing a list right now of potential breakout candidates. So I'm in on Sakona. I think he's saying the right things. I think he's matured a lot. His body's changed a lot. Mm-hmm. We saw him in high school. There was even talk of maybe he becomes an offensive lineman in college. You know, he had a lot of, I don't want to say bad weight, but he had a lot of weight in his gut, and you look at him now and all that's gone and it's moved up here. He was very complimentative of the strength and conditioning coach Bobby Steiner and the boys. He was all in on them too. I mean, I feel like everyone we talked to is very big on them, but his body has definitely changed, and he was kind of very impressed how much his body has changed. So I'm excited to see what he does in fall camp.
Honestly, one thing with the work that Robert Steiner and his group have done, I just want to mix it up, Keely. You're looking at me weird.
It's just
because I didn't say Bobby Steiner and the boys.
Yeah, there you go.
Want to mix it up. But one of the things that I think is notable is they don't necessarily have the largest shoulders. They don't look absolutely ripped like everybody's coming off the, you know, coming off the bus as the first guy, that type of thing. But we're noticing a lot of guys that had some weight around their waist, that's disappearing. So I think they're slimming up some guys. Now, whether that's good or bad in the long run for the longevity of a season, sometimes you need to have a little bit of fat on there as some armor. But I talked to Drake Jackson. He's a guy that's a little bit slimmer, and people are worried about him because he slimmed down last year. He was nicked up. He's at 240 right now. I said he wants to get to 245, 250, 255. And he said he wants to add muscle to add an extra layer of armor. And that's what sometimes that fat can be as well for you. You know, just having some extra pounds can take some of that abuse that you suffer in the trenches. But I think we're seeing a lot of guys are in better shape, whether or not they necessarily have the largest traps or the largest biceps or whatever. They are just in better shape. And I think that goes back to the conditioning, like you pointed out, Keely, as well. So this might be a team that in the fourth quarter really takes off in some games because they're more better endurance than their opponents. We'll see, though. And that's a big thing that's down the road that will be, you know, I think will be a trend more to find out rather than something that we'll see right away. But you talk about Sakona, only two defensive snaps last season. He had three snaps overall. Same with Kobe Pepe. He had 28 snaps total. And then Dejon Benton is another guy that will be in the mix at that defensive tackle spot. He only had five snaps last year. Now, he played a little bit in 2019, but, you know, very little experience among
less
that
than
group.
40 snaps between those three. That's
crazy.
Tough.
I just wanted to point out, when I talked to Kobe Pepe, he said that he was above his ideal weight. And I asked why, and he said, well, you know, fall camp, I tend to shed a lot, so we've mm-hmm. made sure to pack him on to make sure. So it's not... I don't think it's like a one-size-fit-all where Bobby Steiner's going, hey, everyone slimmed down, everyone cut body fat. I think it sounds like they're at least taking it by a player-by-player approach, which I think is good. You want to have that customization.
Yeah, definitely. You want to be able to, you know, cater to each player and how their body changes throughout a season, because what a player looks like going into fall camp oftentimes looks very different than what a player looks like at the end of the season. From the bumps and bruises, how much do you work out during the season? You know, how much can you lift? How much will your body allow? Injuries, all those different type of things play into it. So, you know, it's interesting that you point that out, because I think that's a great way to go into it. And we'll see how those bodies look after fall camp, in particular for the big guys, because those guys their bodies can change dramatically. It can be, you know, you can lose 7 pounds in a day. How much can you get back when you go to eat? You know, you're hydrating, all those different things that, you know, that's where you need that nutritionist. The nutritionist and the strength staff have to be on the same page, and that's what you need, as well as the coaching staff. So still a to be determined on where these bodies look at the end of fall camp going into the season. But I think right now, I think they're in much better shape as a collective. And, you know, we're hearing nothing but positive things about Robert Steiner's work, and I think we're seeing some results, even if fans on the P are looking at some photos and going, I don't like it.
All I know is I'm going to start telling my girlfriend I'm storing up body armor. Baby, it's just armor. I'm just so I can protect everyone.
Yeah, I've built up way too much of that during the pandemic.
Yeah. We got body some body armor that we can give to Drake if he needs our body armor.
And just quickly, a final point before we head into our special teams preview. Fall camp, we got our schedule released on Monday as far as what we can do, how much we can cover. It seems... it's definitely more than we were able to do in 2019. We're able to see more. We will be able to film more and take more photos for a longer period of time. I believe it's 50 minutes now instead of like a 10-ish minute span of time we got in previous fall camps. So that at least is good. More content for you guys. But I think it sounds like we'll have to pull back a little bit on our play-by-play analysis, a.k.a. ghost notes. We can't give as much detail as what's happening in practice each day. So it's a give and take. We will be able to be on the field, and then we will have an option to go up to the aquatic center as well and get a more overhead view of practice on Tuesdays. So
would that view be from above?
I think it would be from above. Yes, yeah, shotgun. So. It would be.
Because birds. Yeah, a lot of above evaluations going on.
So yeah, overall, I feel like USC could have used the pandemic as a somewhat valid excuse to completely shut us out, like a lot of programs have across the country. But seems like we're getting more than we're used to, or at least have been in 2019 and 2020, obviously. So that's what we're working with. And obviously, we're excited to give you guys the best coverage and share our thoughts and takes after each practice. And I don't think I've said it yet, but practice starts on August 6th. So look out for that on Friday. Alrighty, guys, as we promised, the special teams preview. We got through the offense, we got through the defense. Now, the specialists. If you're looking at the punters, Ben Griffiths remains the starter, assumed starter. Parker Lewis is his backup. Place kickers. As far as departures, Chase McGrath, he transferred to Tennessee. Michael Brown also left, so now you are left with Parker Lewis and Alex Stadhouse. I guess first let's start with punters and place kickers. What are you expecting from those guys this season?
First of all, I'm excited for this preview because, one, I'm a former kicker slash punter, and two, I'm a special boy, so specialist and a special boy. I don't really have anything after that, so shotgun if you want to.
You're a PG County boy, you're a special boy, you're a lot of things.
Yeah, I'm a special, special boy.
You know, I don't think we've seen.
You want to take a second there?
You cracked me up, Chris.
Yeah.
I don't think that we've. I'm not shaking.
All right.
I'm keeping all this in. It's just.
I don't think that we have seen the full potential of the special teams. For one, because John Baxter was in charge of Parker. I mean, Ben Griffiths, and I think that he had some had him do some things that, you know, didn't allow him to fully use his leg, basically wanted him directionally instead of some booming punts like we would see in practice. And then also Sean Snyder didn't have the opportunity to get a full off season, was very abbreviated in what they could do going in. So I think that, you know, there's an opportunity for the special teams to take another big step forward. And I think Ben Griffiths can be a weapon. It's flipping the field, doing different things there. I think Parker Lewis can be a weapon. He's got to take a big step forward, though. I think he can. He's perfectly capable of it, has a strong leg, got to be more consistent. I think a full off season with Sean Snyder, I think the work that he'll be able to do with them, I think that you'll see that. So I think you'll see more consistency from both those guys going forward, and I think that elevates the special teams again.
I definitely think special teams is a sleeping giant, if you will. There's a lot of potential in there, a lot of talent. You know, we saw the development with Sean Snyder, even though it was sort of like a weird offseason, didn't get a full hands-on experience with them. As you mentioned, Ben, massive leg. Also, side note, just got engaged, so congrats to him. He's
Aussie,
oi, oi, oi. So congrats to him. Personal success off the field. And now you're hoping that it, you know, translate into, you know, maybe a Ray guy kind of semifinalist kind of season. You know, that was kind of the initial expectations for him. I believe I pegged him to be a finalist for the Ray guy in his first year after all those damn spring punts. those damn booming spring punts. Never again.
I can't talk about it.
Still got trauma over that. But, you know, take another step with him. I think he showed a lot of growth, a lot of more weapon ability last year. Saw his numbers jump. Used them a little bit differently than Baxter did, Snyder did. And so I'm expecting, you know, a kind of all Pac-12 caliber season, kind of being that running again. And then Parker Lewis, like you said, really strong leg. I think he did a lot of great things as a freshman, but just need that consistency up. Just need to get that a little bit better. And I think he's all Pac-12 caliber as well. Not honorable mention, but, you know, with on the first or second team. Super strong leg. Just want to see that grow there. And then hopefully, you know, maybe he can get some clutch moments under his belt. Maybe get a couple game-winning attempts, a couple of makes. You know, that's still something he needs on his resume. He needs some of that those big clutch moments.
He also could get some clutch tackles, even though you're not ideally wanting your kicker to make any tackles on. But he's going to be on kickoff duty once again because he's got the strongest leg. And dude looks like a linebacker. I mean, he's looked like that since he came out of high school, but we saw him for the first time yesterday, first time this summer, as well as Drake Jackson. I don't know if we mentioned that earlier, but first time we had seen him.
You said you talked to him, but yes.
But that was the first time we'd seen him. But so seeing pretty much everyone, we basically saw everyone throughout the summer. So no lingering questions about if anyone's going to be around for fall camp, if something's happened, anything like that. But Parker Lewis, first time seeing him, and big dude, you know, for a kicker, definitely for a kicker, he's a big dude.
So the same thing about me when I was kicking shotgun.
It's true. I mean,
it's like looking in a mirror.
I'm going to spare the listeners, but when you said dude looks like a linebacker, I wanted to sing dude looks like a lady, but with linebacker instead. But I didn't, because I'm not a singer. I'm just saying.
To the ear viewers?
The ear viewers, yes. Sparing the ear viewers.
And just a quick note, I had Parker Lewis, as you know, people on the Peristyle know I'm doing the top 25 countdown. Gotta plug it. He started off our list at number 25 for me. Number 25 on the countdown.
Oh, don't call it our list.
Our being the USC football.
You took the reins this year after we did it last year as a group, as a collective, and Keely slowed everything up.
Can I just get a side note to the ear listeners right now, ear viewers? If I tried to bring these two in, it's like a group project where no one gets the job done. Everyone, the debating, the getting everyone on the same page to get something done. So I just did it myself. I was Thanos and I did it myself. Fine, I'll do it myself.
I just won the credit. You know, anytime I'm in a group project, I don't want to do any of the work. I just want the credit.
Come Fair on. Enough.
Sounds about right.
So for my top 25 countdown, thank you. He was number 25, and I had him there just because I have no idea if this offense is going to improve in the red zone, which means that's going to put a lot more pressure and opportunity for Lewis to rack up a lot of field goal attempts, rack up some points. So obviously he could be needed to come away with some points in the red zone if USC once again struggles to finish off drives. So that's why I had him in the top 25.
If they're better in short yardage situations, he'll have more opportunities. You know, they'll at least get in the red zone. Red zone's much more difficult. You've got a compacted field. But if they're more consistent with short yardage situations, that's the 30 to the 50 was an area where they really struggled last year. So I think that could create some extra opportunities for him for field goals. And like you said, that he could get a ton more extra points as well.
And just quick side note, I do want to shout out an intriguing preferred walk-on that joined the team, Dennis Lynch, out of Newberry Park.
But the accent, though.
The accent. He's like legitimately like 5'3", but he has a massive, massive leg. He's making like 70-yard field goals just like, you know, viral kicks, not like viral, but like he posts videos of himself making 70-yard kicks in like practice and stuff. He is Irish and he has like a legitimate Irish accent. 5'3", massive leg. Just want to shout him out because he is an intriguing addition. He was a soccer player that a familiar story with high school kickers. Football coaches go to the soccer practice like, hey, guys, just kick this ball. Let's see who's got some potential. And then they grab whoever's got the strongest leg. So that was his story. He's only been really kicking for 2 years. Didn't get a junior season because of the COVID or whatever. He missed a season. So he only has like 6 career field goal attempts in high school. So just a name to keep an eye on. I don't know if he'll be a factor, but a lot of potential I see. And he just, you know, cool guy. I've talked to him before.
I mean, if he can kick 70-yard field goals, he has potential to be the kickoff specialist as well.
Yeah.
You know, when USC is trying to put the ball in the end zone.
Get Parker a rest because he's doing that too, and you don't want to wear that leg out.
Also worth mentioning at this point, the long snappers, Damon Johnson returns. He specifically said unfinished business in his return note on Twitter. So it appears he's going for that long snapper award that he didn't win in 2020. So at least USC has a reliable guy back for 2021.
He's a six-year in college. He spent a year in junior college where he didn't play football, came to USC. This is going to be his fifth year at USC. He's, you know, USC describes him as one of the nation's premier long snappers, and that's actually accurate. You never talk about poor snaps on kicks, kick attempts, or on punts. And he's a guy that gets down the field and helps make tackles on punt coverage. You know, he's got a couple of fumble recoveries in his career. I know at least one. So he's a guy that gets down there and puts some pressure on the punt returners as well. And that's something that's a little bit underrated as far as long snappers go. But it's an important key for the punt coverage unit for that long snapper because they can't be touched coming off the line of scrimmage. They can't be, you know, as they snap the ball. So they get a free release and they can get down the field, and he does a good job of that. So he's actually an important piece that no one ever talks about, and when your long snapper's not talked about, that's usually a good thing.
I always say long snappers are like audio. If you don't think about it, that means it's good.
I mean, similar to Zach Smith, who was at USC and was part of the Rose Bowl team. Never talked about him. Very good long snapper. And then, you know, he's got a nasty stash. And Jack Cacente, his backup, has some nasty flow, mullet flow as well. So I think you got two long snappers that are really living up to the tradition there.
Moving to what's going to be interesting and definitely something we're going to have to watch for in fall camp, returners, punt returners, and kickoff return. Not only are you losing Stephen Carr to the transfer portal, you lost Amon-Ross St. Brown and Tyler Vaughns to the NFL. Those were three guys who were staples back there for USC on special teams. Who does USC look at now? We saw Gary Bryan Jr. The UCLA game stands out in my mind of that electric return he had. But it's a lot of different guys we'll see get a shot at returning.
Yeah, Gary Bryan Jr. is probably the lead dog there as the guy that has some experience. You mentioned the UCLA return sets up the final drive for USC. You know, what are they going to look for back there? That's the big question. Gary Bryant Jr. brings speed. They've got some more speed on the roster this year with Taj Washington, Jake Smith, some of those guys. Do you see one of the running back transfers get in the mix? Is Keenan Christen in the mix with his speed? Or are you looking for a guy that can make the first guy miss as far as a punt returner? Gary Bryant Jr. has the jukes. You have some other guys, you know, that you brought in that can make a guy miss. What are you looking for out of those? I think that's kind of – it's going to be an interesting battle. It's kind of one of the more intriguing battles, definitely the most on special teams. But throughout the fall camp, we'll see, because normally at the beginning of a camp, you have like 12 guys back there. And then after a couple of days, Ronald Jones as a freshman gets – okay, Ronald Jones can't catch the ball on the kickoff. So he gets pushed out and he goes – and works with the rest of the group rather than the kick returners. So you see that group dwindle down, but there's a lot of options this year. So how are they going, what are they looking for, and how are they going to kind of figure out that battle? That's going to be kind of interesting, I think.
Yeah, one of the underrated battles of fall camp. Mm-hmm. Sean Snyder has a war chest full of options to play with, and I think we threw these out for the defensive preview, but even a guy like a Prophet Brown and a Jalen Smith, those guys we talked about, how they're dangerous with the ball in their hand. And maybe, you know, if they're spending their time developing with Dante, a cornerback, you know, their way to contribute would be on special teams as kick returners, maybe backup punt returners. But yeah, Gary Bryant is the name to know in that group, just because I feel like he is the favorite to win that punt return job, because he was a deadly punt returner in high school. And then kick return, you have a little more flexibility, especially if you want to give him some rest. But he was essentially saved that UCLA game with that big play at the end there. So, you know, a lot of potential for him. Just need him to be healthy. But I think he could be one of the best returners in the Pac-12, and if not the nation, you know, by the end of the season.
Yeah, big thing is staying healthy for Gary Bryant Jr. And then, you know, if he is one of the guys, if he is the punt returner, who else, you know, is he back there for kickoff return as well? Like you said, are you resting him? Who else gets in that mix? Is there a rotation? We saw both Amon-Ross St. Brown and Tyler Vaughns returning punts at times last year. Do you try to keep Gary Bryant fresh because, you know, maybe he's a starting wide receiver? You know, a lot of different ways that Sean Snyder could go about it. And maybe game plan to game plan, it might even change. You know, what we're looking at and as a special teams unit, what do we see as far as when they're breaking down film? Do we need a guy that's just fast because we're going to open up a big hole? Or is it, you know, is it because you need a shifty guy back there? So there's some different things that could go on with that position battle. So it should be really intriguing.
Overall, we saw improvement from the special teams group under Sean Snyder in 2020. And that was with a limited offseason. I know we keep saying it, but it impacts what they're able to do. And so I'm really curious what he'll be able to do in 2021, because he said, you know, I kind of just had to come in and be, hey, do this simple thing, rather than, I think he's a more complicated teacher. And I think he wanted to get into that, but didn't have the time in fall camp.
I think he also will have more weapons, not necessarily just the returners. We just talked about them, but you look at the guys that are new on this roster. A ton of new safeties, a ton of new DBs. They've got a really deep linebacker core. Those are the type of positions that you normally see on special teams that are making a lot of plays. You know, the guys like Juliana Falanico, who's been a special teams maven for them, those type of players are the ones you're looking for. I think he has more options, more weapons. You got some of those young guys that are going to be trying to make their mark on special teams and, you know, potentially earn extra playing time on defense or on offense. So I think that he's going to have more opportunities opportunities and a better overall talent pool to pull from this year with just some of the different position groups that they brought in players in.
Well, like I said, if you missed any of the previews heading up to fall camp, be sure to check out our last couple episodes. We give you in-depth breakdown of position battles, storylines we're looking at. So be sure to look out for that if you haven't seen it already. All right, let's jump into questions. First one is from Ben, who says, if you could choose five players on the team to take a big step forward in their play this year, who would you choose? Now, we all took a second. We wrote down our answers. So I'm curious how many overlaps we have. Shoddy, you go first.
Are we just going one? Or are we going to list all five? Or what?
List all five. Go for it.
I'm going to go with Isaac Taylor-Stewart. I'm going to go with Cortland Ford and Jonah Monheim, both those offensive linemen. I put the defensive line because I think everyone in that group.
Cheater.
Disqualified.
There's no one. There's no one returning that has produced a ton. And I think Drake Jackson can take a big step forward. He only had two sacks last year. And you're looking at Thule, Sakona, Pepe, that whole group. So yeah, I couldn't pick just one. So.
Trash.
Chris.
Brew McCoy, too.
Salvage this, Chris.
I follow the rules. And I already told you early in the show, all the stock I own, Jamar Sakona. He's my pick for a breakout candidate. I also had Jonah Monheim. Raylan Goforth was another one I had.
What about that?
Chase Williams. Mm-hmm. And also Brew McCoy.
I had Isaac Taylor-Stewart, Kobe Pepe, Brew McCoy. Keontae Ingram, don't know if that counts, but I'm putting it in there because I feel like he kind of had a bad rep with Texas fans, but I was impressed from what I saw in spring camp. And then a kind of wild card, I said Josh Jackson.
I wrote him down initially as well, but I was trying to slim it down to five.
Yeah, and then he picked the entire defensive line.
Four in one group.
Okay, so let us know in the comments when you listen who won or on Twitter. Obviously, it's me, but...
Who won?
She didn't follow the rules. She picked someone that wasn't even on the team last year. So, yeah.
He's taking a step forward. I think that counts.
Let us know.
We got a question from Joseph, who said, I think Clay Helton is a good coach, but it drives me nuts every year to hear him and the staff talk about building a good culture. He's been the coach since 2015. That culture should already exist. How much hitting going on in week two and three of fall camp will tell it all? Thoughts? Shockin', I know you're probably right there.
No, I definitely think that it. Well, what they do in two and three is important, but after they go through that mock week and we see that, you know, okay, there's some optimism there. What are they going to do after that? I think it's more than what they do just in week two and week three. It's, are we going to see it continue? Now, I would like to see what they did in the spring where they mixed some things up, did some different things, the Trojan drill and, you know, stopping practice and changing up things. Would love to see that in fall camp, mix it up rather than just getting in a routine and being set, which is what Clay Helton has done every single year with the new defensive staff and with Clay McGuire on staff now. Do we see some differences? I think they have changed the culture, and I think that's all started with the defensive staff. Can they continue it, though? They've made an adjustment to the culture. I won't say they changed the culture. They made an adjustment to it. Can they fully change it? We'll have to find out at the end of fall camp as they go into that first game more than just fall camp itself, I think.
Yeah, I think Shotgun hit it on the head, but if you continue to see those kinds of, you know, keeping the team on their toes, changing some stuff up, not sticking to the routine, you know, I would still like to see that, you know, that Trojan drill come out every once in a while, get the team hyped, get those freshmen, get that experience for them part of the team because it is a big team bonding experience going mm-hmm. through that together. So I would like to see some of that, but I also will – you know, play the other side and say, look, the season is coming up, so I think you need to be wary of not beating up your team too much with the season opener right around the corner. So I think you want to see that moving forward, but I think you also need to be cognizant of, you know, you need your guys healthy come September 4th and for the long term.
As they say, a little strategery with it, you know. Be strategic in when you choose to break out drills like that and when you choose to mix things up. It doesn't have to be full bore when we have full pads. We're just going to tackle. We're going to scrimmage every single time for 2 hours. No, but when you see the team is going in a lull and you're wearing full pads, that's the time to make an adjustment to the practice schedule. You can't just be set in stone with everything you're going to do, which is basically what they've done. They've gotten to that routine, which is a positive thing in a way to be prepared for the game and have your game day routine. But with 18 to 22-year-olds, you have to be able to switch things up, keep them invested, keep them, you know, on their toes a little bit, and keep things, you know, from becoming mundane. And that's what can happen in fall camp, especially week two, week three.
Yeah.
You know, you're just going, it's kind of becomes a slog, and it's not the same as it was even 10 years ago when there were 2-a-days and everything else, but it still becomes a slog because, you know, you're basically football for 24 hours, you know, 24 or six. They get one day off during the week, but it's basically 24 hours because you don't have classes yet.
I get Joseph's point about the culture thing. I will say, though, this year seems like it could be different solely because USC's athletic administration and Clay Helton specifically sought out people who have this hard-nosed tackling mentality. Like, it seems like it's in their nature. Like, you can't make up what Todd Orlando says. Like, that guy breathes it. Like, no pad practices don't even count. So I just think it's interesting. I said it last week, but this is where the rubber meets the road. How are those people on the staff who bring that culture, what's that going to look like when they meet the Clay Helton that goes into fall camp and then wants to kind of pull back a little bit? What will we see? I don't know. And I do think Joseph is right. This will be the test.
And how many players are on rehab island in week three? Is there 25 players over there? Are you injured or are you hurt? Are some guys able to push through and practice? I think that's something to keep an eye on as well.
We got a question from Keith who said they can still put Reggie's number up in the Coliseum for all the Heisman retired numbers, question mark? It was like a statement question.
I mean, why can't USC? There's nothing stopping them. There's no disassociation, even if, you know, he has won a Heisman. That's for Heisman Trophy winners. Does he have a trophy? No, but he has won a Heisman, so I don't see why not. And I think they should do it in a ceremony. It should be a re-unveiling of that number.
And obviously, Keith's question is coming off the heels of the NCAA saying that they are not going to relook at past infractions based on the new name, image, and likeness rules.
Come on, the past is the past. We don't want to worry about that. Which is actually exactly what I would have done if I was the NCAA, because you're just going to open up a whole can of worms if you start saying, well, this one can come back, but this guy's still being punished or whatever. Now, if they want to push it and go to court and do everything else, then maybe you change your mind, but just straight up be like, nah, we're not going to do that. We're going to move forward.
We got a question from Chris who says, with NIL coming into play this season and rosters having double numbers, could we see USC put names on the back of jerseys to make players easier to identify? I know USC fans and alumni freak out if you even mention changing the color of the shoelaces to the uniform. It's true.
I think it's still a long way away. You know, I think there's still be an uproar with that. I think you can still, if you're a player, you can still sell the jersey in a different way to be able to make money off the NLI, but or NIL. But I don't think that the fan base and the administration is looking in that direction right now.
They also can't pose in their jerseys. That's property of USC. So that would kind of make that argument to put,
unless USC allows it. You know, USC would have to have an agreement with the players that they could do that. So
sure,
unless they're getting a cut of it, USC is probably not doing that. So yeah.
And right now in the NIL rules that USC wrote for the university, that's not the case. So I don't think that that will be influenced at all because of NIL. We got one last question, and it's from Ben. He says, looking back at highly rated recruits who just didn't work out at USC, which ones bum you out the most? I have trouble letting go of Kenny Bigelow, a damn 5-star defensive tackle, he says. Not really doing anything as a Trojan. Bryce Dixon was a tough one, too. Obviously, they didn't work out for different reasons, but it sucks that we never got to see them do their thing.
I mean, I'm a little newer to the beat, so I think one that stands out to me is Joseph Lewis. He was a guy he was probably the first like cycle that I covered with USC fully, so I got to know him. Really good talent out of, you know, Hawkins High School. Just the off-field stuff just really derailed that, so I think that would be my pick.
Yeah, I didn't even think about him. Bigelow is definitely one, and
yeah,
you know, multiple knee injuries, just never got to see him live up to his potential. A guy from your neck of the woods over there, Maryland, Delaware area. And when you get a 5-star guy to come across the country like that at a position where, especially nowadays, there's, you know, limited talent on the West Coast in trenches, compared to some other parts of the country, you expect that guy to really take off. Another one in a similar vein, EJ Price, the offensive lineman that, you know, from Georgia that came across and just, you know, had some off the field issues that couldn't get everything together. So those two kind of stand out to me.
The one that pops in my head that you haven't mentioned yet is Jamel Cook. Mm-hmm. That was someone who in that spring camp, he was in the wrong place, but he showed potential, and that just didn't pan out either.
Yeah, I also think of Oluwole Batiku, a guy that went to Illinois and had some success there, but I just USC never used him in the way that I think was best suited for him, and I think it stunted him a little bit, and he had some hip issues. Great kid, loved talking to him, but you know, it just never panned out for him at USC. Same thing with Josh Amadebebe, went to Illinois and had a successful season or two there, but didn't work out at USC, and also another great kid that, you know, came across from Georgia and expected some big things from him just with the athleticism that both of those guys had, but unfortunately it didn't work out at USC. Max Brown's another guy that we see around a lot, you know,
that Pac-12
always enjoy talking to and whatnot, but just didn't work out for him as a five-star guy, you know, coming down from Washington, winning the job and then getting beaten out by Sam Darnold. And you know, unfortunately for him, after he transferred to Pitt, his career ended basically with a shoulder injury, so he didn't get to see if he, you know, could make a roster in the NFL. So unfortunate for a couple guys that injuries derail them. You know, some guys it's off the field stuff, but you know, there's always some talented players that you expect a lot from and hope for the best for them, and things don't work out. And I think that's what everyone in this category kind of is.
Alrighty, well, that wraps it up for questions, which means, Chris Trevino, it's time for me to pass the torch to you. It's time for some take it or leave it.
Guys, we're back. Took a break off from the fake real corporate sponsorships. You know, I had a lot of people hitting me up interested for last week, but I told them, no, can't do it. Have to send a message. But we're back now. And guys, we like to ball outside of this podcast, right?
Ball is life.
Back when I was in shape.
I think we're all thinking of different things, but we are very humble on this show. But outside of this show, we are savages.
Okay. Got your belief in.
That's why the Family Feud and USCFootball.com is partnering with Visa to bring you the Peristyle Red Card.
Oh.
Fancy. So you can ball like us everywhere you go. Customize your card with your favorite USC athletes or even us. There is an exclusive back-to-back photo of Shotgun and I for Helium Boys if you sign up for the red card before the start of fall camp.
Ooh.
Next Friday. So how's that sound?
Man, that sounds good.
Can you customize the faces? Because if you guys look mad at me, maybe I'll spin less.
That's also a good point. The more you buy, the more exclusive perks you get through the card.
Okay.
Free tickets to games. Photo ops with Turnover Traveler.
Ooh.
Not Traveler, Turnover Traveler.
You spend 5,000 points in your first year, you get invited to all of Keeley's birthday parties for in perpetuity. If you spend 100,000 in the first year, you get to go on 2 vacations with Ryan Abraham. International.
It's going to be hard to pick which one you go on.
I know.
There's so many other goodies. So many other goodies. Lynn Swan autograph headshots. This one's been in the pipeline for a while. We have all these stashed up, so we got to get rid of them. But there's so much more. Guys, I got mine 2 weeks ago, and I've been bawling out.
What's happening? There is a visual bit happening right now.
I've been bawling out.
He just put on a chain.
I've been bawling the fuck out, guys.
He just put on a chain.
Guys.
It's a ball out chain. Instead of a turnover chain or anything else.
I went to the same guy that does Little Uzi Vert's head thing, diamond in his head. So I'm out here. Sure, my card has a 40% interest rate, but I look good. I'm out here. Take your mind off frustrating credit cards and leave your friends, colleagues, and haters jealous of your SC plastic. Visa, everywhere you want to be, unless it's the college football playoff. Thank you, Visa. We really appreciate you coming back in style with a great one. Thanks for hooking this up. So, yeah. What do you guys think? You guys going to get that sign up?
Hey, I mean, the interest rate is up there, but...
That's for me. That's because my credit is so shitty. Okay. So you probably can get a better one, but that's just me.
The key is just pay it off every month. Get all the points, pay it off every month. That's the key to a credit card there. But I'm in. I'm in.
Okay, sounds great.
Here's the question. If I get 5,000 points and I birthday for me, how does that work? Since I'm the reward?
Yeah, we'll get to something else, but okay. that's for everyone but you.
If you get to 5,000, maybe we'll get a cake for you for everyone.
Right.
Oh, thanks.
That you can share with everyone else.
Yeah.
That gets to 5,000.
Okay.
What? Fine.
Let's move.
It'll be a gluten-free cake.
It should be to begin with, because it's my birthday.
All right, let's move on. Starting with something easy. New rosters came out. Take it or leave it, the number zero for the first time.
I saw it this morning. I saw the zero next to Corey Foreman's name. It was a little crazy, but I'm going to take it. New things are happening in college football. Why not zero?
Okay.
I will take that much more than I'm taking 30 for a quarterback, which is what Mo Hassan is listed at now. Even though he's going to be injured this season, not going to be in pads in that number still as a quarterback. That's just funky.
So you are taking it?
Taking it.
Okay. Reggie Bush, been in the news a lot, so we'll start off with the first one. The new Reggie Bush doc says he's finally ready to tell his story. Are you taking or leaving a new, I don't think there has been one, but are you taking or leaving a Reggie Bush documentary?
I mean, why would you not take that with his side of the story when he's been very quiet about this entire situation for a decade, basically? Now he's going to, you know, tell his side of the story. So I'm interested to see what his side of the story is. You got to remember, and USC fans, I'm sure it'll be difficult for them to do that, but this is his side of the story. And the NCAA has their own side of the story. I don't know if that's going to be told in the doc, or they're going to try to get the NCAA, if they try to get the NCAA involved in the documentary at all. But remember, it's just one side of the story. But definitely, I'm definitely interested to see what he has to say, and, you know, especially I hope that he talks about how it affected him going forward.
Yeah.
And how, you know, he's talked about since the disassociation has ended, he's talked about how much he loves USC and how much USC means to him. So not being for a decade, not being able to rep USC, what did that mean to him? You know, those type of things. That's what I'm really interested to see, more so than just him straight telling his side of the story, because then again, it is one side of the story versus the other.
I agree with what Shotgun said, also because just sitting through the Todd McNair trial, that was the one voice that was really needed in all of it, and it was just missing. And so I'm really curious to see what he has to say about it all.
Wonder if they'll get Todd McNair for the doc. That'd be good.
Ooh, interesting. Who, by the way, congrats to him, settled with NCAA. So there you go.
Finally.
Continuing with Reggie, the NCAA recently doubled down on their decision to not reopen the case or look or possibly review giving Reggie Bush back his Heisman. Reggie Bush has gone on a Twitter rant as we were doing this podcast. So I asked you guys that Reggie Bush would get his Heisman back before 2022. So now I'm opening it up again because, you know, nothing is ever set in stone. But will Reggie ever get his Heisman back on the heels of this announcement?
I literally said leave it last time and you guys thought I was crazy. And I still stand with it. I'm leaving it. I don't think he's going to get it back.
I'm taking it. He'll eventually get it back. Because when the NCAA is dissolved.
Okay. Well, if we're going that route.
He went full picture, baby. He's looking.
Mark Emmert talks about we need to decentralize and blah, blah, blah. Then, yeah, the NCAA will eventually dissolve. And then Reggie can be like, where's my trophy? I want my trophy now.
College football analyst David Pollack had this eye-catching quote. So are you taking or leaving it? Drake London, quote, Drake London will set the college football world on fire in 2021.
I'm going to leave that.
Okay.
And I think Drake London is going to have a big year. But to what extent can a West Coast player set the college football world on fire when all the media attention flows to the East Coast? Now, when USC is undefeated and they are in the college football playoff picture or national championship picture, they do get a ton of attention. But it takes until week 8, week 9, week 10 for that to actually happen unless USC's preseason number one. We've seen it with like the Oregons and Washingtons when they've been in that mix. It takes until their last couple regular season games before it seems like the rest of the nation goes, oh, wait, they actually might be able to make it in. And we won't get four SEC teams in the playoff. So I think that set the college football world on fire, I think the semantics of that I cannot agree with.
and semantics are important.
That is very true.
Welcome to the Family Feud podcast. I'm going to leave it as well. I think it not only depends on Drake London's consistency, but Keaton Slovis's consistency. And we don't know what that's going to look like this year. It's one of those things where if they are consistent and they have that connection, which we saw in spring camp, we noted it. I just don't know what that's going to transfer into games, which Keaton Slovis we're going to see.
I think he can have a monster season, but even last season, Devontae Smith, it took so long for people to go, oh, wow, this guy's really crushing it. And now the fact that he won the Heisman still stunned me just because it's so difficult for wide receivers to win. But, again, it took until maybe the penultimate game of the regular season before everyone was talking about Devontae Smith, even though he was putting up ridiculous plays and numbers before that. I just think it's that much more difficult for a wide receiver.
Well, that's why I'm saying consistency, because alluding to your media thing, it has to be constant. And if it's constant, they're probably doing well overall as a team. And thus, that's when people, at least on the East Coast, start to pay attention.
I can see where your point is, but we both agree.
It's our favorite time of the year, which is preseason watch list awards season. So
sarcasm font.
Two Trojans will at least make the semifinal round for a college football award.
Take it. If you just said finalist, that might have been...
I said semifinalist.
I know, but semifinalist, I'm taking it. Because that can sometimes be like 15 people, so...
Yeah, I'm going to take it as well.
Did it happen last year? I don't think that happened last year.
It was six games,
too. But, I mean, Damon Johnson was a finalist, so you got at least one right there.
The loss of USC associate head coach Jason Hart will result in a significant dip in USC basketball recruiting.
Can't answer that until his replacement is hired.
You're teasing it.
I mean,
coward.
I think that it will hurt them, but they can also go and hire someone, a dynamic person as well, that has some connections. So we'll see where the hire is. We had Eric Bossy, the national analyst for 24/7, drop by on the thread and said that he expects that USC will have plenty of suitors for this position. So it's a highly desirable position. So we'll see who USC is able to hire, and I think that will determine where that goes. I think they can at least hold steady where they are with a new hire. But I think Jason Hart's a big loss with his development as well. On that side of the basketball, he's really done a great job in his time at USC. And Andy Enfield said it multiple times during the season that he's surprised that Jason Hart hadn't become a head coach already. So this is a great opportunity for him to go and kind of be a springboard either back to college as a head coach if he does well with the G League Ignite, or to the NBA, which is what Brian Shaw, the previous G League Ignite coach, went to the Clippers as an assistant.
Just teave it.
Well, I was going to say who you call as the best USC.
Yeah, the world's greatest USC basketball beat writer.
Out of control.
Just stop by to do this segment. It's crazy.
If he's teeing it, of course I got to tee it.
You know he's going on the radio tonight, right?
I do know
he's
that.
He's going on the radio draft night.
You're talking to, you know, the Pac-12 networks, SiriusXM Pac-12 channel's favorite guest over there. Keely Ewer.
That is false. So in short, yes, I'm going to tee it.
And that's going to wrap it up, because off air we had one of mine blow up violently and not a quick death at all. So moving on to that, we're going to go to the fun ones. I have a lot of fun ones, but do not be intimidated, because the back half are just pitches for new Olympic sports that you guys will take or leave.
Oh, I'm so ready for this.
Yes, because we have Olympic fever. Okay, so New Era, I believe, just came out with these new MLB hats with the logo is turned upside down.
Not new.
Not new.
They've done upside down logos in the past, but I leave it. Not a fan.
Hat expert Chuck and Smiling just
hot expert is just like, no, not about it.
Not a fan.
I don't think I've seen it.
It's literally what it is. It's
the weird ones with the area code and like tacos.
No. It's literally just the logo upside down on the hat.
I'm going to take it. It sounds cool. I haven't seen it.
Oh,
but
really?
It sounds cool.
Interesting. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, I think actually Nick Young has worn a couple to like USC events and stuff, like the Dodgers hat with the LA logo upside down.
I don't understand it.
It
just because it looks different?
Yeah.
Always you guys try just to sound do. Like old men right now.
I don't know. Maybe they're really into the Olympics and they've been hanging upside down on the uneven bars or something. They want to be able to see it that way.
Okay.
Nice.
Nope. Did you stretch before that reach?
Whoa.
That's I don't good. Ever stretch.
Okay, I'm sending this to your phones right now because I need you to see it.
Wow,
to actually
this is a really in-depth take it or leave it.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a basketball training device. It's basically just a headband with a hand in your face that you use to practice your shooting. So it's literally just a hand headband that's in your face that you practice. They're looking at it right now. They think it's hilarious. Taking or leaving it, this new age training piece of equipment.
That's hilarious. And I think I'm just going to take it because it's fun.
Whatever, man. Just whatever. If someone's buying that, then hey, take it. You know, it's something you'll see in a game. Someone's going to put their hand in your face. So, sure, go for it.
This one is sort of a football one. So it kind of bleeds, but it's not USC. So I just threw it in the fun ones. But Vandy head coach Clark Lea came out and took away all the numbers from his team. So they practice without numbers. He's saying the numbers have to be earned. Taking or leaving this move.
Leaving the numbers don't have to be earned. The numbers have to be on the jersey to be visible. It's a part of the rules of the game.
He's just
leave
talking
it.
From a reporter standpoint. Like,
no,
who
I'm not.
The hell is this guy?
If you want to punish or you want to say you got to earn something, Vanderbilt has names on their jerseys. That's what you earn. High school, we had to earn having our name on the back of our jersey by doing certain amount of summer workouts or whatever the work you put in the offseason. Then you earn your name on the back of your jersey. Rather than you just show up and you're playing for the name on your back of jersey. That's the whole idea behind it. But you earn that, I think, rather than you earn your number. Now, coaches do this all the time. Some players have to earn their numbers, and oftentimes those are the single-digit numbers. We've heard about that with USC, or you earn a 55 or whatever, but that is different. Like, just not having numbers on the jerseys is dumb to me, leaving it.
Hardly.
And this is a former Notre Dame coach, I believe.
Yep.
They're Notre Dame
defensive
coordinator.
Yep.
So I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I think I'm going to leave it. I feel like as a player, I wouldn't have too much attachment to my number. I'd be like, okay, coach, take my number. Like, I don't know. So I'm leaving it.
I mean, some players do have a lot of attachment.
No, I know.
Some of them are very significant to
this
some
is a personal play. Take it or leave it.
Whoa. Whoa.
Mac and cheese in general has made an appearance on this segment before.
True.
But now we have mac and cheese ice cream from a company called Van Leeuthen or something like
yeah.
that.
Oh, yeah. It's near my apartment.
Yeah. They have this new mac and cheese ice cream. It's sold out immediately. It is gluten-free, Keely.
Hey,
so if you're interested. But
mac
and cheese ice cream, guys.
Take it. If it's gluten-free and it's mac and cheese, even if it's ice cream, I'll eat it.
That's the only reason that you would need to eat this. Leave it. Ice cream needs to have a sweetness to it.
No, it doesn't.
I don't need...
I have no idea what it tastes like.
I don't need beef pot roast ice cream.
It can be savory.
No, ice cream is not savory.
You would not have eaten that Willy Wonka thing. The candy with Mike TV, and it's like, it's pot roast. No, it's blueberry pie. You would not even be like, nope, get me out of here.
I believe that was Violet Beauregard, actually.
I really wish we could see Shuckin.
You're right. He's arms crossed. He's in full-on
grumpy mode. Yeah.
Grumpy mode.
I'm mad about this numbers thing.
But Shuckin and Willy Wonka would be hilarious. He'd be like, you know what?
Wait, they have a brand new coaching staff. How are they even identifying the players?
I thought it was going to Willy Wonka for a second.
I thought so, too.
What? How? They're like, that guy's doing good, coach. Who is he? I don't know the players all by name.
In Pop Warner, they put our names on our helmets with tape.
Yeah, maybe that's what they're doing, and that's how they're identifying. But usually it's like, hey, 86 is doing really well, coach. But when you don't know the players, you're meeting them for the first time.
I want Shaka to be going on this rant with the poor Oompa Loompa who's showing him around. He's like, dude, I just work here. This is a Willy Wonka's.
Worst part of the
this is a Willy
of
Wonka.
The newer version of the movie with Johnny Depp is that they use one person for all the Oompa Loompas. Worst part.
So that's it. Cut down on that movie budget, baby. And finally, Speaking of mac and cheese making appearances on this before, we've also had Saweetie make appearances on this before, a USC alum, so it fits. Everyone is just getting their own McDonald's meals, guys. She is getting her own. You can get them remixed. So I'm just going to walk you through these concoctions, which are pretty crazy. So you have to take these or just leave them all. You can get a Big Mac with the top bun removed, replaced with fries, and then ketchup. You can get fries with chicken nuggets on top with ketchup. You can get a bun filled with chicken nuggets with ketchup on top of the bun, or you can get two patties with fries in the middle with ketchup.
I'm taking it.
The girl likes her ketchup.
It's all the elements of what you eat.
Yeah, but I'm leaving it because putting ketchup on top of the bun is a terrible idea, and not having the top bun, just bring the top bun back and do the same thing is fine, but the edibility of this is not feasible. Like, you're just gonna get messy all the time.
Says the man who eats an orange like an apple. All I'm gonna say.
Yeah, you just grab it and you eat it. I don't know what the issue is there. This isn't like, oh, I'm getting ketchup all over my hands because I'm trying to hold this burger.
You're clinically insane. I just feel bad for the McDonald's workers that have to make these concoctions.
Like, what the hell is that one again? They got a big poster up with all the remixes. They order it.
They're going to be uneven number of buns. It's just going to be terrible. It's just going to be terrible.
Oh, yeah.
And those are all the fun ones. I have these Olympic ones. We're just going to run through just a hard take it or leave it shotgun. Okay. No going on a crazy tangent here. Just
at the end. Got it.
Just okay, that's fine. Olympic shopping cart races.
Take it. Supermarket sweep.
See, a supermarket sweep style.
Yeah.
Is this running or like motorized? Because there's motorized carts.
No, no. It's all straight. Manpower.
Okay, take it. Supermarket sweep style is great.
Olympic chess.
Take it.
Leave it.
Why not?
I will let you answer.
Because there needs to be physicality for it to be a sport for me, not just mentality.
Interesting.
Lame. Equestrian?
Why is the spelling bee not a
horseback riding? Where's the physicality?
Riding the horse. Getting the horse to go in the direction you want it to, even though I don't think it's a great Olympic sport. Dressage.
Olympic darts.
It's like archery, but miniaturized.
But with hands.
Take it, because if you've ever watched darts at 3 a.m. on Fox Sports 19, it's fun to watch, especially when there's people in that are drunk in the bar rooting it on, or the arena that should be always a bar.
It's a perfect Olympic sport in another time zone, because it's just on at 3 a.m.
True, yeah.
Take it.
Olympic wiffle ball.
What's the difference between badminton and wiffle ball?
What? Are you serious?
There's no net.
Wiffle ball is a baseball, softball type of sport.
Oh, sorry. When I think wiffle, I think of like, I don't know.
What?
That was the air going through it, which it still does.
Okay, I don't know what that
but
is.
But I was thinking of a more like...
The shuttlecock in
yes.
badminton?
Yes.
You're thinking that's just badminton. A ball that...
I was thinking of badminton. That's why I asked.
I'm leaving it.
Oh, okay.
Why?
Because like softball, there's no scoring at all in it because the pitchers are way too good.
I guess that's I'm leaving it as well. He sold me on that.
Olympic video games, like esports.
It's eventually coming, so I'm going to take it just to be out in front.
Also always mentioned on this segment, esports.
Yeah.
You love an esports.
I love a good esport debate.
Yeah, for what he said, I think I'm going to take it. But where's the physicality?
Oh, interesting.
Have you ever played video games throughout the night?
Yes.
Everything's at night for you.
Same with chess.
You get done, you're shaking your hands.
Same
your
with
backs.
Chess.
Oh, no, they're not.
You're smacking the checkmate. Check.
The checkmate. Yeah. The clock.
The clock.
Final two, Olympic dodgeball.
Take it.
That was a unanimous one. I felt that one coming. And finally, Olympic beer pong.
How about Olympic beer games? Can I add an adjustment?
Sure, like
King's Cup, stuff like that.
So it's like multiple events. So
yeah.
You have like a team of five.
It's like a relay, maybe.
Sure.
I'm leaving it.
Like Beer Fest, the movie.
But here's the thing. They all train with water for 4 years, and then the actual event, they train
great.
With beer.
That's great. I love that wrinkle.
Thank you.
It's the best thing you've said on this show.
Were they just randomly tested for alcohol in their system?
Yeah. Yeah. Honor system. Maybe.
There's no honor system. You think the Russians are going to pay attention to an honor system?
Russians are going to do it with vodka.
Why are Russians in the Olympics this year? Russian Olympic Committee. Get out of here.
And those are my Olympic sports. There's a lot of good additions. Look out for Olympic dodgeball coming in 2035.
Honestly, I don't know why that's not already an Olympic sport.
I mean, it's basically handball, sort of, kind of. And I guess that means...
And what?
Okay, I thought you were going to do a whistle, but...
A whistle?
I have a lot. I have
a whistle, but I can't do a whistle sound. I can't do a referee whistle sound.
Tweet!
Guys, I have a lot
that's
of
a tweet sound.
Great of and-ones. I've just been storing them. We need more podcasts to get through these and-ones, so I have a lot of them. I almost don't know which one to go with. What's the most pretentious fruit?
Pretentious fruit. Guava.
Fruit. I'm like, going through Beverly Hills? I think that's the most pretentious fruit, right? Dragon fruit.
Okay.
No flavor.
Just the name?
No. Tremendous appearance.
Tremendous.
No flavor.
Substance.
No substance at all. Pretentious.
Huh. That's an interesting.
Good name, too. Dragon
that's
fruit.
Actually like a very like.
Yeah, well done.
Logical breakdown. Like if someone's, I'm ordering the guava of the dragon fruit salad, you're like, ugh. The worst. I thought I would throw you off with this, but he was like, it's like he's been thinking about this.
This feels like something Shotgun would think about. He's right. Just like sitting in and he's just like.
Shotgun and I had a long conversation about fruits in the car on the way back from Arizona like 2 years ago.
That's true.
Very
That's
true.
What I'm saying. This seems like it's up to Shotgun's alley. I'm going to go with my original answer of guava.
Why?
I think just the name of it is very, it has like Valley Girl accents in it where you could be like guava.
Can you say that one more time?
Guava.
Yeah, there you go. I need that sound bite.
Like guava. And then it just seems like something that you have to get on vacation because you're on vacation, but then you don't get it in your normal life. So that seems pretentious to me.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your thoughts on fruit and Olympic sports and Big Macs with fries and ketchup on top.
I really wanted to know, maybe we got to call a technical foul here to get an extra one in, but what sport do you think that you could be an Olympian in?
Oh, it's an extra add one.
This week.
Like, are you saying, like, right now, if I just dedicated 4 years of my life to train for it?
Yeah, basically.
But you're not saying, like, I grew up playing the sport. It's like right now. Like, yeah. I'm going right now. The easiest? Oh, I'd be going all in on handball, baby. Get me on a handball court.
Handball is one of the few sports that I still cannot figure out, really. Like, I've tried to watch it a couple times. It's just like, I don't really, like, you can tackle, but you can't tackle. Like, it's kind of weird.
If you're a former Power 5 starter football player and you, like, can't make the NFL, just become the world's best handball player. Just do it. You'll get Olympic gold. You'll have fun doing it. You'll make amazing plays. You'll be the most athletic dude on the court. Just do it. Just do it. I'm telling you, just be that. So I think handball would be my guess. I would want to be a star in swimming, but I'm nowhere have the ability to make it on that platform currently or ever probably. So handball is my choice.
What's the one where you go pull?
Skeet shooting?
Skeet shooting.
I was watching it at like 2 a.m. the other night. There was a guy who was like 58 years old, so I think I would have time to train. Yeah.
You have terrible eyesight. So I'm crushing your dreams.
I would get some help with my eyes. Don't crush my dreams, Chris. You've already done it so much.
Thank you to Visa. Get yourself a Parasol Red Card and you can bling out like me. See that?
He wore the chain the whole segment. There you go, some ASMR for y'all.
And sorry to stun on y'all. Got a flex on it for these ear viewers. Let them know what I'm rocking with.
And congratulations to all the USC Olympians out there, all of the people competing that will still be competing for the next couple of weeks. It's been really fun, recognizing some of the names, like, oh, that's USC person, that's USC person. Yeah. Some people that are up and coming, some people their careers are on the decline, but just fun to see, different generations of Trojans out there making their mark as well. And congratulations to Evan Mobley. By the time this is published, he will be an NBA draft pick and expected to be a top 5 pick. It was really fun covering him this year, even though, fans didn't get to see him in person, unfortunately. But, big time future going forward for him as well. So congratulations to him on his NBA draft selection.
Well done. Plus one with everything you just said, Shadi. Alrighty, that's going to wrap it up for this week's podcast. We'll be back next week with our final preview episode. We'll talk about the main storylines, and we have a fun game in the works, I believe, prior to fall camp. So be sure to stay tuned or look out for that episode. That's going to wrap it up for us. That's Chris. That's Shotgun. I'm Keely. We'll see y'all next week.
Peace.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.